I know.
Good evening.
Hello, good evening.
We'll wait a few more minutes. I hope you're well.
Thank you, I am.
And your intuition is working well.
Well, I just thought I'd try doing it and then seeing what you wanted. If it worked, and it worked. Maybe. I really wonder if you checked it thoroughly. We'll find out when we read the handout.
Oh, I'm sure it'll work. Of course, I do tend to change hours and dates, and
Well,
so
with church,
we'll just have to
they
wait and
want
see.
10 o'clock to start at midnight. You know, but I left it as that. I felt like there was still time to,
Right.
change it. So. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
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 So we will start with the Lashem Yehud, and we're on verse 11 of section 1 of the Parasha of Noach from the Sulam commentary. Lashem Yehud Kudsha Barichu Ishkin Tevit Hilur Himurut Hilur Hilur Himu Leakta Lashem Yudhe Bobav Hev Yehuda Shalim Bashem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah Lasok Torah Mitzvah ויהי נועם אדוני אלוהינו עלינו מעשה ידינו כנוני עלינו מעשה ידינו כנונהו. תחת צא נוח יתחזה מיומה תתפרי עלמה למחווה בתיבה ויהי בורה חד ומעל בה ויעד לה יתחברו כחדה לחווה, עלמא כדכא יאות לבטר, מה כתיב ומאלה נפתה כל הארץ, מהו נפתה כמדיית אמר ומשם יפרד. דמי תמן ישתכח ברודה ויתבדרו תולדות לכל סיטרין. Come and see, from the day the world was created, Noah was destined to be joined in union with and to enter the ark. And until they were joined as one, the world had not reached a fully stable condition. And as soon as this occurred, it is written, from these was the whole earth overspread. What is meant by overspread? These words are analogous to the verse, and from there the river parted, meaning that spreading out is similar to the supernal ark, which is the secret of the garden. For from that point in the text onward, we find the separation and the diffusion of progeny into all quarters of the world. This means that after they were perfected in the ark, they were able to come forth and exist in the world of separation without being annihilated, as was the generation of the great flood. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Hello, could you refresh my memory? What generation was before Noah, or at the time of Noah?
There were 10 generations before. Noah was the 10th generation. So his father was Methuselah. His grandfather was Hanoch ben Yared. Then there was
So that generation had passed on because after the flood happened, after his Melissa, right? He died. He passed away, and then the flood happened. I think it was what delayed for a little bit.
Right.
Is that
delayed for Shiva for a week.
Okay.
Didn't the name Methuselah mean when he dies the flood will come?
Say it again. You broke up.
I said I think Methuselah meant when he dies the flood will come. I think that was one of the meanings.
I'm not sure. I had never heard that before, but it's very possible.
Okay. So basically, all the righteous people had passed on or moved to the next world, and then the flood came.
Except for Noah.
He's right. Okay.
I never took it as righteous people having passed away. I thought the whole generation was corrupt. So it's a new way of thinking.
Methuselah wasn't, and Hanoch Ben Yared may have been, but may not have been. There's a dispute as to whether he was righteous or not, because he was righteous up until the age of 365. And then he walked with God, and there's a discussion as to whether that meant that he would have been continued to be righteous, or he would have fallen because of the influences of the people around him.
I guess I see it like, you know, you said there's always 36 hidden exotic kings, I guess.
Yes,
that we don't know of.
But that applies after the Torah was given. It may not have applied to the earlier generation.
Right. Right. So that's why I kind of had the thought that the righteous had moved on to the next world, and that's why the flood came.
Well, Methuselah was clearly righteous because the flood was delayed.
Right. That's exactly right, yes.
And I was probably influenced by the movie. You know, everybody in the movie was corrupt. that's the picture I have in my head.
Well, I've avoided seeing the movie, so what am I going to do?
Well, if he wasn't righteousness, if he was not righteous, it would not have delayed a week. You know, that's the way I see it.
And that's true. Are there any questions about the specific verse that I read, though?
I got sidetracked. No, I don't have any.
Well, isn't it saying that after the flood, then it was possible for civilizations to start again?
No, it's really saying that without the ark, without being perfected by walking into the ark, the world had not been settled to the point that people could have lived in the world without being destroyed.
Kind of. I suppose that's why I should have put that last sentence, or it's one sentence, all in caps, which is basically what it's saying there.
Right.
So basically, uniting with the ark, that meant that they could survive in the world from that point on. If
correct.
He had not gone into the ark, then there was no generations would have survived. Is that what you're saying?
That's what the Zohar is saying, yes.
Okay. Thank you, Noah.
Thank you, Hashem. Always thank Hashem.
Yeah. Well, yes, absolutely.
That was the mistake of the generation of Enosh. Because
right.
people would thank the angels for bringing them things, and they forgot to thank Hashem.
Oh, I always thank him, but I was just, since we had Noah on the mind.
Verse 12. V'kol ha'chad kedugma ada begine kach eile toldot noach eile v'day deha yisoda v'alma yihu d'yavid toldot v'lekama tinara na'akiv V'tavar kach hu badai v'tachatze mishiyura t'tevuta of name akehu tosefta. And all is one and one is like the other, because the branches below are similar to their roots above. So the verse states, these are the generations of Noah. These surely annuls that the former generations that did not survive in the world. Only Yesod, the foundation of the world, which is Noah, produced the fruit that still exists in the world. Rabbi Abba approached and kissed Rabbi Elazar, saying, the lion in his might has perched through the rock and broke it asunder. Meaning it was hard as a rock for him to understand the inner meaning of these verses. But Rabbi Elazar removed all the difficulties he had in comprehending the text. All this is certainly true, because all that has been said about Noah and the ark below corresponds to their supernal roots in the world of Atzilut above. Even the measurements of the ark correspond to their roots above. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Is this where the language of branches come into play?
Well, it's referring to it, but it's not really talking specifically about the language itself. But it is saying that above and below have to be consistent. And that there is, in every aspect, a rock, a blade of grass, a human being, an animal, that we see in the physical world has a root above. And then that root has a root above it. And then that root has a root in the world of Atzilut.
Can you give me...
Go ahead, Hana.
Well, I was about to say, and Rabbi Abba is referring to Rabbi Elazar as the line that helped him understand.
Yes.
The verse. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Malka, you were starting to say something also?
Well, maybe I'm not quite sure exactly what language of the branches is. I mean, I think I do, but I may not understand that terminology or exactly what that's about. And when we can discuss it later, the question and answer.
It's a valid question. That's fine. What's the word angel mean to you?
A, a, spiritual energy, spiritual energy.
Okay. So are there angels in the world?
Yeah.
The physical world. There are people who act like angels, don't they?
Yes.
So when you say to somebody, you're being an angel, are you talking about the person in the physical world, or are you talking about the spiritual energy above?
I'm talking about the spiritual, I'm talking about the action. I guess when someone says that in our physical world, like you're like an angel, so I'm thinking of the misvote or the action that a spiritual being that helps out, you know, I guess trying to get these words out. I guess I see it more of as an action from above.
Well, that's fine with respect to the word angel. But now let's say there's a rock. In the physical world, there's a granite rock that came off of a granite mountain. And you describe that rock to someone. You say it's a granite rock near that granite mountain. Now, are you talking about the rock in the ground, or are you talking about the strength of the next world, something strong in the next world? As a human being, as somebody just having a conversation with a friend without going talking about Torah or spirituality, your answer would be, I'm talking about the rock on the ground. But the Kabbalists, who use the language of branches, when they use the word rock, they're not talking about the physical rock. They're talking about the root of that rock in the world of Zeran Pin, in the world of Yetzirah. And every other Kabbalist knows when they use the word rock that they're talking about something strong in the world of Yetzirah. But if they say we're talking about the world of Bria, and it's a rock in Bria, the Kabbalist knows that he's talking about the root of the root. And they've all traveled into those worlds, into those levels of consciousness. So they've all experienced what is the root of a rock, and then what is the root of the root of the rock. So when they use the word rock, they all understand what they're talking about spiritually. Whereas as a student of Kabbalah, you know the concept that they're talking about the root of the root, but you really haven't experienced the root of the root until you have done some astral traveling, or you've done some far-seeing, which is a telepathic kind of skill, and you've experienced that root for yourself. And then when another Kabbalist or says, I'm talking about this rock, you know they're talking about a different world and a different level of consciousness and what it actually means, and because you've experienced it. But the language of branches is essentially a way to communicate about spiritual items, spiritual experiences, because otherwise you have no way to describe them. You don't have the language. What does an angel look like? Well, Well, we all have we've all seen drawings, and we've seen the Sistine Chapel's roof and all of that. But until you've traveled to experience what does an angel look like, you don't really know. But once you have traveled, you have a picture in your mind because you've experienced it as a picture. And the other Kabbalist has experienced it as a picture. And when he says the word angel or the word rock, those pictures are clear to everybody who's had that experience. I'm hoping that helps you understand the language of branches on a better level.
Yes. Yes.
Why do you think Rabbi Abba referred to Rabbi Elazar as a lion and maybe not another animal?
I'm missing something. Is it in this verse, verse 12, that
yes.
he refers to him as a lion?
Right, the lion in his might. Well, I guess that's where it is. Has pierced through the rock. Okay.
Right, okay. That is a verse, the lion in his might has pierced through the rock and broke it asunder, is a verse in the Torah.
Okay.
It didn't specify which one, so we don't know, but it's clearly coming from a verse in the Torah. But Rabbi Abba is describing Rabbi Elazar as a lion, a strong animal who pierces the rock, meaning mm-hmm. he breaks through the klipot. Is that clear, or?
Yes, it is. It's just at first I didn't catch the words in his might, and I was trying to make an association between a lion and a hard rock, and I would have thought another animal, but I see now the rest of the sentence there that I was missing those words.
Understand. Also, the last word, the last sentence in verse 12, even the measurements of the ark correspond to their roots above. That's a big hint. A very significant hint.
What's above is below. It's exact. It's like an exact replica of it.
When we studied it before, I wrote the measurements. Or at least I have three measurements written down.
Well, if you read Noah, you'll see them. But just let's use one example that I remember, which is that there are three levels to the ark.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does the three tell you?
The three columns. How about Nefesh, Neshama, and Ruach?
I think the three columns, but all of those things.
One person says three columns, one person says three levels of soul, and one person would be saying the three worlds of Bria, Yetzira, and Asiya.
I just know it's significant.
Yes, it is. But also, the dimensions of 30 cubits and 300 cubits and 50 cubits and all of these different aspects, they're all significant, but it's also It's not a measurement like we measure. It's an energy. The number 30 represents an energy. Well, what's the energy it represents? It represents a lamed, because that's the gematria of the lamed. Now, what is the energy of a lamed? Instruction,
teaching,
right? Instruction. It goes above the line to Bina. All of these things that you learn about that letter lamed applies to that number 30. The Kabbalist has all of these different levels of comprehension unified in his mind. That's his spiritual level. That's what makes him so unique. That's what gives him Ruach HaKodesh. Because his mind can expand to handle all these different connections to understand what's being said to him by the other Kabbalists. Rabbi Berg described his meeting with Rabbi Kaduri. Now, I don't know that you all know. I know you all know who Rabbi Berg is from the Kabbalah Center in the 90s and 80s.
Right.
But you may not know who Rabbi Kaduri is. Rabbi Kaduri was 108 years old when he died.
Oh, my gosh.
He was the foremost Sephardic Mekubal Kabbalist in the world at the time. And when he died, there's all kinds of stories about him. But when Rabbi Berg had gone to him at the time in the late 90s, where they were about to publish the Siddur of the Ali by the Kabbalah Center, and no one had published that. All of the teachings of the Ari and as it applied to prayer before. And he went to get the support of Rabbi Kaduri. So he made an appointment and he went to visit him. And the discussion, when he came out of the discussion, he says, it's the first time in my life since my teacher died that I had a conversation that I could really relate to, like, we've both been there, we've both done that, and we both bought the t-shirt. Now, he didn't say the t-shirt. He said, we've both been there, we've both done that, and we were communicating on so many different levels at the same time. And I hadn't experienced that since my teacher had passed, which was 25 years earlier.
Well, I can say I would have liked to have been a fly on the wall for that meeting.
You wouldn't have helped being a fly on the wall, because a fly doesn't have the capacity to handle all the different levels.
Oh, thank you.
And if truth be told, as you grow spiritually, you'll be able to travel back in time and be in that conversation, because it never disappears. It's always available to you. And as you grow spiritually, all of those different levels become available to you.
I don't think any animal has the capacity to have a vessel to that point.
There's a teaching in Kabbalah about the breaking of the vessels, that the further, the deeper the spark of light falls, the higher they are. So the light of Keter fell the furthest and deepest into the Klipot. The light of Chachma didn't fall as far, but the light of Chachma fell further than the light of Malchut. Now, in our world, who is the lowest level?
Malchut.
The inanimate.
The inanimate, the rocks.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the issue with the rocks?
What is the rocks?
The inanimate level of life.
Yeah, okay. The rocks, okay.
The rocks, as an example. What's the issue with the rocks? Why can't, what, they have a desire to receive, don't they?
Absolutely.
But they can't move. Why? One of the Kabbalists explained that they can't move because they are frozen in awe. They are so aware of the Creator. Their awe is so significant, so powerful, that they're frozen. They're moving, but they can't move because they're frozen in awe. It's a very different way of looking at a rock, isn't it?
So, well, basically what you're saying, Keter is the highest, so it fell the lowest. So the sparks are in the rocks just as the highest of the world?
That's one of the teachings, yes.
So that's why some Tzaddikins want to be reincarnated into the rock. I have a little better understanding of the rocks, too. I had to really sit and think about rocks. One day I did that. Because I think I asked the question at one time, why would someone want to reincarnate into a rock? And I got to really thinking about a rock.
And I think the answer was they didn't want to reincarnate, but they needed to in order to grow.
Right.
I had a note written in last week's Torah portion that Balaam reincarnated as a rock, but then there were other levels that he went to.
That is the first reincarnation he experienced.
Right. And it was according to the Ari, so I felt like it was legitimate.
Yes, that is part of one of the stories, one of the things we study in the end towards the later classes in the reincarnation.
And Naval and Lavan, and then there was a person named that I didn't know, I'd never heard of, so I hadn't had a chance to look that one up.
I understand.
I guess we should have made I should have made the connection there, because right in the beginning of Bereshit, rocks are foundations. Rocks are mentioned, they're in the deep. We should have made that connection, right? How important rocks are.
Correct.
There's also a book called Gathered Stones, and stones are rocks, and it's about converts.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, the word stone is used to relate to a letter.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like going back to kindergarten.
Well, that's what it is. That's what Kabbalah is teaching us, how to unlearn everything we've been taught, because it's everything we've been taught is to look at the world through one level of eye, one level of sense.
Right.
And to look deeper.
It's like, okay, all right.
Move off the rocks and now talk about the animals. the animals... And if there is 7,000 year cycles, 7,000 year periods, And if we are in the second one, which is part of the teaching of the Torah, then who's going to be the human being in the third one? That's going to be the animal.
Wait, say that again? I didn't quite get that.
If there are 7,000-year periods for complete correction of the universe, and we in this lifetime, in this cycle, we are in the second of the 7,000 years. We know there were generations before Adam.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the teachings. It's, you know, the whole idea of the Atlantis and the one in the island in the Pacific. We know that's mm-hmm. true.
Lemuria.
Okay. But now let's say we go through our completion, our Mashiach. We lived 1,000 years, and now we're corrected. There's no more human beings. They all have elevated. So who's gonna control the world? The world is gonna come back and be dealing with the new entities, correcting themselves for 7,000 years. Who are they going to be? They're going to be the animals.
Yeah, I can see that, because they were before Adam was made. I don't know if that's a good word. The animals existed before man, right?
No.
Man was created on the sixth day, right?
Man was created on the sixth day. The animals were created on the fifth day. But the animals were not active until man activated them. Adam had to name them in order for them to become active.
But they were created before him.
Yes.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay, I understand that now. Okay. So Malchus will be a world of animals.
Or the animals will grow arms and opposing thumbs and be able to make tools.
Well, we have some that have that characteristic. I think some of them already know how to do different things, because with your classes, even my little ones that are around me, when you'll say something in Hebrew and they will bark like they're confirming, yes, that's what that is.
I know.
And it doesn't surprise me. You know, because more and more I see the animals, I don't know how to explain it. If you're listening to Hebrew or singing a Hebrew song, a song, or singing the Anabah Koah, they seem to gravitate to wherever you are. They know.
Well, that's... All of my students are animals, is what you're telling me.
Just about. In one form or another. We're
Pinocchio.
All Pinocchio.
I hope you appreciate my sense of humor with that.
You had a bigger class. Pinocchio, you had a bigger class than you thought you had.
That's for sure.
There you go.
Actually, I'm aware. Whenever I teach, I'm aware that it's not just the physical people listening on the conference call or the people that are physically in front of me. There's a lot of entities around.
Yeah.
So you all have a beautiful evening, and we'll have some discussion at our 7 o'clock class. We're going to be teaching more about the three-week period.
Okay. Okay.
Shalom to all. And tomorrow at 4:30, we'll have a mini Zohar class. We'll finish out this section one. And the 7 o'clock class, I'm not quite sure. I think it's going to be the study of the temple, the third temple. But we'll see how far we get with the three-week period tonight.
Okay, so the 3 weeks period starts tonight or in the morning?
Well, it starts tonight because the day in the Hebrew calendar always starts at night. But the fast is from sunrise to sunset.
And it's in the 3 weeks, the final 3 weeks is like, the, I'm going to say 31st. I have to go look to see what that date is in Hebrew. It's 21 days, correct?
I can look it up. Hold on a second. It's actually 22 days.
22 days goes into August. August 1st?
Yes, August 1st is Tisha B'Av.
Okay.
Tisha B'Av is the 1st of August.
Yeah.
Do we start saying the Amidah tonight after sunset?
Yes, okay. Meditation we start tonight.
Okay.
Oh, I had a question because I had marked my Amidah several years ago, you know, because I think this is about the third year that I've been able to do the meditations. And after the fifth meditation, and you continue with the Amidah, there are other tetragrammatons. What do you do there?
You see them because they're in the level of Malchut. You've already veiled the energy. You've already injected the consciousness of peace and balance.
Okay.
There's no problem. It's like when you would say the nighttime Shema or the daytime Shema. Do you have a lot of the tetragrammatons in that prayer as well?
Mm-hmm.
And you still use you still see the tetragrammaton Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. It's only in these five meditations where you are veiling the energy so that you remain balanced in this period.
Okay.
Shalom to all.
Okay, shalom.
Shalom. Shalom.